This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Today, the head of the European Central Bank said, in essence, we will get around to fixing the Eurozone someday. Investors worldwide were hoping for something a tad more forceful and punished him, the euro currency, and the markets accordingly. But at least today's market swings weren't because of a computer glitch. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl, and this is your Marketplace podcast for Thursday. It is the second day of August. Have you heard anything lately that makes you just want to jump into the stock market? No, we haven't either. Especially not this. A major brokerage firm is struggling to stay afloat today after losses caused by a software glitch. Knight Capital's problem prompted wild price swings yesterday right after the stock market opened. You could say that glitch cost the company $10 million a minute. Things eventually returned to normal, in the market at least, but it doesn't mean everyone feels settled about it. Our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore reports.
There's a reason that there's no show on TV called CSI, Stock Market. When computer glitches screw up trading, there's usually no way to tell what went wrong and no way to ensure it won't happen again. After bad software at Knight Capital wiped out $440 million in just 45 minutes, I called Dan Goldie, an independent financial advisor in Silicon Valley.
People feel like markets really are stacked against them.
Facebook's IPO was also wounded by faulty technology. Financial advisor Greg Evans, who's with Raymond James, says the frequent computer failures in the stock market unnerve his clients. This latest snafu made him think of the moment in the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, when a computer takes over from its human master.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
The client concerns revolve around this notion that something larger out there is steering the ship and that nobody really has a sense as to the magnitude of the potential problem.
Sal Arnick with Themis Trading says that even professional investors are wary of this inexorable march towards greater trading technology.
The talk among professional investors is they're scratching their head and saying, okay, maybe all this high-speed flipping back and forth, maybe that's not been such a good idea.
Knight Capital is paying the price. Its shares lost half their value today, and the company is looking for a white knight with deep pockets to save it. In New York, I'm Heidi Moore for Marketplace.
We know presidential candidates spend a lot of money on TV ads, but in this internet era, they're also advertising online. And they're finding that unless they reserve that space way ahead of time, they'll have to pay top dollar the closer we get to the election, especially in swing states. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has the story from Washington.
They're the bane of every cat video lover's existence, those 30-second ads you're forced to watch before your video begins. Now, especially if you're in a swing state, you'll see more political ads like this one.
Mitt Romney supports overturning Roe versus Wade. Click here to learn more.
A report from the online video advertising company MixPost says demand for online video ad space will outstrip supply by 20% or more in 11 swing states. Matthew Feeney wrote the MixPost report.
So when you see a large jump in demand and you match that with a short supply, obviously you're going to see shortages.
If candidates haven't already locked in online ad space, they're in for a big shock, according to Republican ad consultant Vincent Harris.
They're going to wake up in mid-September and try to put money online and realize that they can't. And they will essentially be shut out of advertising online in these specific states.
There will be some space left over. It'll be auctioned off and could get quite expensive, according to Jordan Lieberman of Campaign Grid.
Rates could double in certain places.
And we're not just talking about the swing states. Mixpo predicts shortages across 26 states this fall. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
On Wall Street, a fourth day of losses. We'll have details when we do the numbers. The sport of badminton doesn't often make international headlines, but it certainly did this week. Four doubles teams were expelled from the Olympics for throwing their matches. One of those teams was Chinese. They intentionally lost their match so that they wouldn't have to compete against another Chinese team. Why? Well, it's all about how many medals China can get. Yes, if you thought America was obsessed with the medal count, especially the gold medal count, let us introduce you to China. Here's our Shanghai correspondent, Rob Schmitz.
China's obsession with gold medals goes back to the Los Angeles Olympic Games of 1984. The country was competing for the first time in three decades. Chinese high jumper Zhu Jianhua was widely expected to win the gold. He won the bronze. He came back to China to find the windows of his Shanghai home smashed by an angry mob.
The government has been explicit that Olympic success will be a proxy for national success.
Shanghai-based author Adam Minter wrote about Beijing's gold fever this week in his column for the financial news service Bloomberg. He says for China's government, winning gold medals is kind of like hitting GDP targets. Get it done, then let the state media spread the propaganda.
They don't really know how to cover the Olympics except to cover them as a projection of national power. So you still have almost this reflexive instinct to only show gold, only to show that China's first and that China's doing really well.
Chinese TV coverage includes a global gold medal tally ticker. China, of course, is number one. And want to watch events like sailing? Sorry. In China, you're stuck watching skeet shooting, archery, 10-meter air rifle, events where China's expected to win the gold. So how much pressure does this put on Chinese athletes? On Monday, Chinese weightlifter Wu Jingbiao broke down, cried, and apologized for his poor performance during a live interview with state broadcaster CCTV. He said he was ashamed for disgracing the motherland. He then bowed deeply to the camera. Wu had just won the silver. On the street here in Shanghai, 30-year-old Hu Ronghua says it's a shame about all this pressure on Chinese athletes.
I think for most Chinese people, it doesn't matter to us whether our athletes win gold medals. For me, what's important is the spirit of the games, competing and participating.
As for the government's gold fever, who thinks Chinese officials should instead focus on building more sports facilities for the people so that non-Olympians like him can play too? In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace. Online gaming is a $25 billion a year industry, an industry well known for its juvenile young players who backstab, jeer, and verbally spar with their opponents. But the fun in games has turned increasingly ugly, and videos have surfaced of verbal, even physical harassment of female players. Amy O'Leary writes about the issue in today's New York Times, and she joins us now. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tess.
So, as you point out in the story yourself, name-calling is a long-standing fact of life in the gaming industry. So why is there a spotlight on it now?
Well, over the last 6 months, there have been a series of incidents that were not just, you know, incidents where women experienced harassment in a private online world, but really there were public faces put to this kind of treatment. You know, one of the incidents was a tournament where some pretty severe harassment was all captured on video.
Well, those videos were embedded within your story, so let's take a listen to one of them.
The sexual harassment is part of a culture. And if you remove that from the fighting game community, it's not the fighting game community, it's StarCraft.
So explain to us what was going on there.
That was Aris Bakhtanians. He was a coach at a video game tournament who had been making a series of aggressive and sexual statements towards one of his players, a woman named Miranda Pacosti. And Mr. Bakhtanians was asked about this by someone else in the room during this tournament. I believe he was trying to explain that the fighting game community is a culture where trash talk is normal and acceptable, and that's part of the fun that people have in these games. Where I think for Miranda, the woman who was being harassed in the tapes, there was a line that was crossed where it went beyond normal trash talk to a point where she felt so uncomfortable she forfeited the tournament.
Wow. She just, what, up and walked out?
Actually, she, you know, it was kind of sad. She committed a kind of virtual suicide. She was in an elimination round, and she just walked her character into the opponent without any defense and was killed off.
Well, you know, as I said, this has been going on for a long time, and, you know, as you also point out in the article, the standard advice, both in gaming and kind of on the internet in general, is ignore the trolls.
Well, I think that gamers who want a healthy, supportive community to play in think that the advice to ignore the trolls doesn't go far enough, because what it does is it creates a community where this kind of speech is tolerated. And so now you're starting to see blog posts and petitions and calls for action among gamers to figure out how you can eliminate this kind of speech, how you can police it and report it better, and how communities themselves can shut out players who are creating this kind of intolerant atmosphere.
Well, there's a dual issue here because this is all happening on the internet, right? Because you have not only whistleblowing going on, but then that can kind of be a powder keg in itself to set off even more harassment.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we saw with a woman named Anita Sarkeesian, who raised money for a video series she was doing about women in gaming, there was a backlash from the internet where she received a great deal of harassment, personal threats, and then she took the extra step of documenting it all online. And a man in Canada made a game where you could punch her face in this online game and layer cuts and bruises on her image because he didn't like what she was doing. And so what we've seen with, you know, the way that the internet has become such it fuels instant communication and dialogue in a way that you get cycle upon cycle of reaction and backlash and reaction and backlash.
Amy O'Leary is a reporter with The New York Times. Her article in today's paper is entitled, In Virtual Play, Sexual Harassment is All Too Real. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, monks making wine in Cannes.
If we sell the wine at a good price, we can live without asking money to other people, and we can give some money.
But first, let's do the numbers. No action by the European Central Bank. Big reaction on Wall Street. The Dow gave back 0.7%, 92 points, to close at 12,878. The Nasdaq unloaded 0.33%, that's 10 points, to end at 2,909. And the S&P 500 gave back 0.75%, also 10 points, to finish at 1,365. After saying he would do whatever it takes to support the euro, ECB Chairman Mario Draghi decided to do nothing. In return, Morgan Stanley fell 3.5%, JP Morgan Chase dialed down 2.25%, and Bank of America reversed 0.5%. In a retail stunner, the Gap exceeded earnings expectations by a mile. Thank you, brightly colored jeans. Its stock leapt nearly 13%, but it was a teenage wasteland for Aeropostale, down almost 33%, and Abercrombie & Fitch, down 14%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.48%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories?
Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. In Washington, the Labor Department reports on unemployment for July. The annual Giant Music Fest Lollapalooza amps up in Chicago. Don't feel like standing in a crowd under the hot sun all weekend? It'll be webcast on YouTube. And on August 3rd, 1958, the submarine USS Nautilus became the first vessel to get to the North Pole underwater. It gives you chills just thinking about it. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. You may have heard yesterday was Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day. Hungry fans of the chain showed their support for its president, Dan Cathy, and his views opposing gay marriage by devouring a record number of chicken sandwiches with two pickles each. Gay marriage supporters are planning a kiss-in tomorrow at various Chick-fil-A outposts. Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji tells us franchisees are caught in the middle.
The Jim Henson Company used to provide toys for Chick-fil-A's kids' meals.
It's not easy being green.
That's not happening anymore. The mayors of San Francisco, Boston, and Chicago spoke out against the fast food chain. And in response, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee called for a day of appreciation. In places like Liberty, Missouri, the lines were blocks long.
It's going up that way, around the roundabout, in front of Lowe's.
That YouTube video is from someone in Liberty waiting to buy a chicken sandwich yesterday. Nobody from Chick-fil-A's corporate headquarters is doing interviews, but in a statement, they said it was a record day for business.
What's being left out of a lot of this discussion are the thousands and thousands of Chick-fil-A employees who are stuck in the middle, either being treated like they're part of a great crusade or being treated like they're part of a bad empire.
Chris Moran is the deputy editor of theconsumerist.com. He says CEOs shouldn't make political statements, especially when independent franchisees are involved. A Chick-fil-A operator in Nashua, New Hampshire, has been getting press for agreeing to donate sandwiches to an upcoming gay pride event. When I called Anthony Piccolo, he refused an interview. In a statement, he said, "As an independent franchise operator, I am dedicated to supporting our local community in the best way possible."
Thank you for calling the Chick-fil-A Corporate Public Relations Hotline.
Franchise owners I called refused to speak on the record. Most sent me to the corporate hotline. And the Chick-fil-A feud is not over yet. Tomorrow, gay rights activists will hold same-sex kiss day at Chick-fil-A. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
It's been about a year since the twin fiascos of the debt ceiling debate and the subsequent Standard & Poor's downgrade of this country's credit rating. You remember, no more AAA, only AA+. It was indeed historic, and forecasters in business and politics made dire predictions about how the downgrade would whack your wallet. Didn't exactly turn out that way, did it? Well, we're now in an Olympiad, so we asked Marketplace's Mark Garrison to host a little medal ceremony for the best and worst downgrade predictions.
As far as worst predictions, it would take a medal stand the size of a swimming pool to hold all the people who were wrong. But we've only got room for one, so the gold goes to Republican Congressman Paul Ryan, speaking on Fox just after the downgrade.
Obviously, not only does it hurt the federal government and its ability to close the deficits, but it hurts people. You know, car loans, home loans, all these things are going to go up.
Didn't happen. In fact, the opposite occurred. Home loan interest rates are now at record lows, in large part because global investors kept faith that America would always pay its debts. But not to pick on Ryan or Republicans. Plenty of Democrats were wrong, too. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner said several times that a downgrade would never happen until it did. But then he got something right, speaking to CNBC.
The judgment by S&P changed nothing, added nothing to what people know about this country.
That proved true, but it's not good enough for a gold medal for best prediction. That goes to Legg Mason fund manager Bill Miller, who appeared on the same show where Congressman Ryan got it wrong a year ago.
Contrary to what I think people may expect, I don't expect we'll pay more for interest rates. The downgrade was not an economic event. It was a symbolic and psychological event.
Miller wasn't a lone voice. At the time, Warren Buffett said the U.S. should be upgraded to quadruple A, a rating which doesn't actually exist. Investors who followed that advice made money. The Olympics were born in Greece, so let's give a special medal to Europe. Carrie Leahy at Decision Economics explains why.
The U.S. is not doing well, but it's doing better, much better than Europe.
All the recent turmoil in the Eurozone actually made the U.S. economy look like a safe place to invest. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Well, Mark just told us about who got it right and who got it wrong in their predictions a year ago. A lot of people did get it very wrong. But what most could agree on was that political dysfunction was on full display. Now, here we are a year later. How fed up are we now?
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said!
Frank Newport is the editor-in-chief of Gallup and joins us every week for a little attitude check. Hi, Frank. Good to talk to you again.
Good to be with you.
Okay, so you went out and asked people what the priorities should be for the next president of the United States, whoever that may be. And, of course, number one was jobs. But the next one surprised me a little bit. Almost half the respondents said that reducing government corruption was their priority, ranked higher than a deficit reduction and lower taxes. What is that all about?
Well, you know, it's an interesting point. We don't see corruption show up when we ask open-endedly, what's the top problem? What should the president do when elected? But when we put it in this list of about 14 or 15 different items, as you say, it popped right up with 45% saying it was extremely important. For one thing, I just think it sounds like kind of a, like fighting crime in general. Of course, you know, we should reduce corruption.
Right.
But also, it's probably symptomatic of the fact that a lot of Americans continue to be very, very negative about their federal government and the way Congress is working.
Well, and in fact, a third of the people that you spoke to said that government gridlock was a problem. It has been a year at this point since we faced down the debt ceiling issue. We had the S&P downgrade going on. Congress not able to agree pretty much on anything. I wonder if American satisfaction with this gridlock is worse, better, any different from about a year ago?
Well, all of our indicators would certainly suggest that we are not as bad off attitudinally now as last year, a year ago, as you mentioned. In fact, when I make a speech and look at graphs of consumer confidence and Obama's job approval rating and satisfaction with the way things are going in the U.S., there's this huge drop-off last July and August. And people say, what was going on then? You know, was this some kind of international crisis? And we say, no, it was the debt ceiling debate and almost being on the brink of not being able to pay our debts. That really caused dramatic problems in Americans, a lot worse than we are now. But, of course, looking ahead, the big fear is, of course, that this year, particularly near the end of the year, we're going to see the same thing with this giant fiscal cliff facing us straight ahead.
And, of course, that fiscal cliff involving the expiration of the Bush tax cuts, as well as some possible big spending cuts on the way. Frank Newport is editor-in-chief at Gallup. Thanks so much. Good to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Just off the coast from the French movie festival town of Cannes, there's a little island that's been occupied by monks since the 5th century. They're an interesting bunch. During the film festival, they hold a silence festival at the monastery for stressed-out Hollywood types. But beyond that event, the monks are making money with wine and a luxury restaurant. After all, the more you earn, the more you can give away. John Lawrenson has our report.
Night prayers sung by the 20 monks of the abbey here on the island of Saint-Honorat. They live by strict rules: poverty, silence, prayer, and wealth creation. Brother Vladimir is the abbot. He admits that St. Benedict, who drew up the monastic rules, didn't have this last one in mind back in the 6th century, but he insists this monastery obeys his teaching in spirit.
In the medieval time, monks were growing food necessary for the people to live. With our wine, it's a completely different problem. Our wine is not necessary. And if we sell the wine at a good price, we can live without asking money to other people, and we can give some money.
The Abbey's wine sales raked in $490,000 last year. The wine was even served to world leaders at the G20 summit in Cannes. And now the brothers have opened this restaurant. La Tonnelle, it's called, where patrons eat seared duck foie gras with confit of violets under the shade of the Mediterranean pines overlooking the sea. It's about $80 for starter, main and dessert. The man in charge of the monastery's finances is very proud of La Tonnelle. He's a broad-chested monk with a sound head for business who goes by the name of Frère Marie Pâques, Brother Mary Easter.
We are targeting a relatively rich clientele, people who really love good food and wine and who can pay for the best. But we have a policy which is to welcome everyone in the same way, rich and poor, educated and ignorant. We have to receive them, Saint Benedict tells us, as if they were Jesus Christ.
Back in the monastery dining room, dinner in silence. Here indeed, all comers can take simple meals for very little money. One of them is Father Dominique Aubert, rector of Chartres Cathedral, who's on a week's retreat. He approves of the monks' initiative and says it'll bring a new crowd to this ancient holy place.
They can receive the people in this restaurant, and when the people are coming inside this aisle, probably they come to see the abbey. It's a good idea they have, because the people are coming to this place in the middle of the sea, where there is something very special, you know, not only a restaurant.
Behind the abbey is a walled vineyard called the Clos de la Charité, where grapes ripen in the sun. Donors pay a minimum of $1,300 to sponsor a vine here. A little plaque bearing their name is put in front of it. And when the wine is auctioned each year, the proceeds, $100,000 last year, go to 10 charities in France and abroad. Giving, says Brother Marie Pâques, is the greatest luxury you can buy. On the island of Saint-Honorat, I'm John Lawrenson for Marketplace.
And you can see pictures of the monks, their restaurant, and their monastery at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final note, Arnold Schwarzenegger has played many a role in his lifetime. Muscle man, actor, California governor, ex-husband to Maria Shriver. And now he is about to add professor of state and global policy at the University of Southern California to his curriculum vitae. That's what happens when you promise $20 million in personal donations and fundraising to create a new think tank, the USC Schwarzenegger Institute for State and Global Policy. The LA Times reports Schwarzenegger's first lecture will commence in December. And this final note, while we're on the subject of Arnold, why on earth did they remake Total Recall? And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow gave back 0.7%, 92 points. The NASDAQ unloaded 1/3, that's 10 points. And the S&P 500 gave back 0.75%, also 10 points. Our editors include John Buckley, Nancy Fargali, Stephen Gregory, George Judson, Jonathan Karp, Sylvester Monroe, Dave Shaw, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson. The acting managing editor is Ethan Lindsay. I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us back here tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.